Quick takes.
Good evening, everyone. I'm Jason Hulls, your host for this here Quick Take. Paul Brooks is also with us tonight. How you doing, Paul?
Yeah, good.
Good, good. And special guest, Riding Shotgun, is our longtime friend, writer, rock and roller, John Thompson.
You know, this is exciting because, yeah, we've known John for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a big fan of the podcast. And John, we thank you for listening. He's given the meh hand signal.
He hate
which
listens.
Which means that he thinks that the show is meh, which is fair.
Yeah.
Mid.
It's fine.
Oh, okay.
That's what the kids are saying these days.
Yes. Anyway, I just wanted to hop on real quick. I'm just kind of going to be in the background for most of this episode, Jay. So I'm going to swing the microphone over to John now and we'll put him on.
Sounds good.
All right, let's get you set up.
Keep this in.
Keep all this
Who's
in.
Who's the producer?
Now.
Are you producing?
I'm producing.
Keep
okay.
this in. Keep your Jason, J.
It's been a long time since we've chatted any further than sort of like a Facebook situation. Well, we're using Facebook, but...
Oh, this is the first time I've talked to anyone, I think, in 2 years.
So, John, we are in the off season now, so conventions are right out the window. So, explain what you've done to us here. Explain what you have done to me and what you made me watch.
Yeah. You know, as Paul said, I've been a big fan of the pod for a while. It didn't help that I've, you know, grew up with you guys and have enjoyed your company.
Thank you.
And a lot. You're welcome, Paul.
Same.
Paul is a special case. Paul fed me donut sticks in high school.
True.
And you led some wonderful campaigns. We're not going to get into any dramatic details.
Is that
not,
what this is about? You've trapped me. I have to defend my decisions as a dungeon master.
I'm more apt to say like games were the best. Like he was a wonderful game master.
Thank you. I don't think we've ever talked about that on our show that I used to run games.
Your guys' group, you guys definitely knew how to make it interesting. That's for sure.
Well, I appreciate that. I would not turn down the opportunity to do that again someday. Hopefully.
I would love it. Paul's great too.
We're all getting toward retirement age. You know, we're closer to retirement than we were the age that we played these games at. I think so.
Yeah.
Maybe when we're retired, you know, we could get back at it.
Well, you got off-season content you need to fill too.
It's true. Gaming is a thing people do now in podcast form and Twitching.
Flophouse Boys, Adventure Zone crew, and a million other people I don't know.
Sure.
This movie was like, because I was like, Paul was like, we're going to get to Rollergator, and I got something worse than Rollergator for you.
Mm-hmm.
And I sent him the picture of them in front of the orb, and I'm like,
mm-hmm.
But I didn't actually remember how not great it was. So sorry about that, guys.
You saw it. Okay, say the damn title.
Oh, well, okay, here's a funny story is I watched the movie twice. I watched the movie four times now in the last couple of days. Two times I watched it not being able to remember the main character's name, and it's in the name of the movie, which I also have a hard time remembering. It's not Jules and Jim. It's not Jackie and
Jill.
Yeah, it's Julie and Jack is the movie.
There it is.
Oh. By James Nguyen.
Yeah.
I've always wondered exactly how to say that.
I've heard it a lot of ways. I looked at a few pronunciation things on YouTube, and that was the safest, I feel.
That feels the most respectful, for sure. For those of you not familiar with his name, he also did the Birdemic films, possibly I would imagine the most famous films that, you know, in the B-movie community that he has produced or directed or... you mentioned something about Rollergator. I gotta know, what was your thought process? Like, you wanted to come on the show, here we are. What made you pick this one?
Well, I guess there were, it was bad and weird, and I wasn't watching it that closely when I saw it, but I do think even after having seen it, I do think it is interesting in the way that it informs Birdemic, because a lot of people have some questions about Birdemic and questions about Nguyen himself and his, like, authenticity and whether or not he is the real thing. And in fact, that is sort of the, I sort of have this weird through line about, okay, so in 1967, Francois Truffaut gave had an interview with Hitchcock, like a 12-hour, really intense interview. And a lot of people say that that is where Hitchcock picked up the idea of auteur theory and where he came around to the idea that he was the author of his own movie. And a number of people say that's what, like, ruined him, even though I think he made Vertigo. He made some of his best movies after that, but it was set him on his path to self-destruction.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really funny because this Nguyen is obviously, like, he watched, these were the movies he watched growing up. I think in Vietnam, he's a
Vietnamese.
He's an immigrant. And I believe his story is that he watched all these movies and fell in love with them. And all of his movies are completely, like, aping that style, even down to Tippi Hedren, who, like, is a victim of Hitchcock's excesses and, like, was treated horribly by him. But I just think that, yeah, this movie asks the question, is Nguyen an auteur, and does that ultimately prove that auteur theory is bullshit?
Wow.
I guess. So just the simple little easy questions.
Yeah. Are you expecting to get to the bottom of that?
Oh yeah. If you don't have an answer, then I'm just like,
well, no. I could just read my answer now, but I thought it'd be more fun to talk about it.
I came on here to get some goddamn answers, Jay, because I knew you were an expert, and no, I have no idea. I have no clue.
Okay, so Julie and Jack, do you happen to have the IMDb synopsis in front of you?
I don't.
I can do it.
Paul?
Do it.
Producer Paul?
I got a smartphone.
Well, you guys, let's just talk about mechanically before we dive too much in. Did you see the twist coming? Was it a twist? And did the twist amount to anything in the... What do you guys think of the quote-unquote twist of the movie?
Okay, well, you know, let me tell you, I think I know the twist you're getting at, but there was actually two twists for me.
Oh, yeah.
Because I didn't know anything about this movie other than the title before I started watching it. So the first twist, so to speak, for me was the reveal that it was a virtual reality landscape that they were meeting in. I did not know that. So I'm watching, and all of a sudden, out of nowhere, you know, you've seen them go, that you've had your first montage of fun and dating, and all of a sudden he just says, "Well, none of this is real. Like, we know that. Like, and we don't know
just
that."
Dropped. Just
he
dropped.
Just drops it, and as he says it, the every piece of the background starts to glitch, and I'm like, "What? What?"
I know this isn't real. I know none of this is real. That's all just virtual reality. I know these columns aren't real. These birds are fake. This feather in your hair isn't real. But it could be real. We could be together right now.
I'm going to get real nerdy here, but the Japanese comic, you probably heard of Attack on Titan. Mm-hmm. It has a very similar, like, just huge plot points will just be revealed in, like, just casual conversation. I mean, they are building up. The more I watch this and the more I see what he's trying to do, that you like, he's, like, trying to build this. It's the end of the first act, basically.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's just so... One of the issues is that they are not going to places. They're going to such dumb places that why would they be in... The first time they even try anything is that party.
You're right. They're from, or he's from San Francisco, right? And they're just, I guess it's to maintain the reality for them. I don't know. It's totally just a thing to trick the audience. But yeah, it was interesting because you kind of get the impression early on that something is up with her. you know, because she's keeping distance. She keeps talking about, like, long life and the longevity of a redwood or a cliff. And he starts to question it and say, well, why are you even talking about this? I don't know. And then I feel like the movie kind of devolves into a formula.
Yeah, yeah.
Jack is trying to track her down because she's pushing him away. She won't get close. His buddy thinks that she's really a man because, you know, this he met her via the whole thing is like an online dating thing. And so
what's the name of the website?
Oh, God, I didn't write it down.
Cupid Matchmaker?
Cupid Matchmaker is .net. It's .net. A scumbag friend knows.
Hey, can I read the synopsis?
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, please.
Paul, edit this in earlier. Jay, can I edit this episode?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Leave all this in.
Leave all of it. Plot. A computer chip salesman dates a software designer in a virtual reality program. Chucky series premiere tonight. Oh, no, that's the ad underneath it.
No. I won't be.
Is that true, tonight?
It is tonight, yeah.
Those ads are awkward. I don't know.
So, yeah, had I even read that prior to watching the movie, I may have been clued in. But no, it was just like a bucket of water. Like when he's like, well, this is all fake. And then it is. It's very confusing.
I wanted to get into a Godardian representation, but everybody rolled their eyes when I brought up Francois Truffaut. So maybe we'll step back from that. But when you
really
do
trying
watch
to drag
it again,
us the culture here, man.
Uh-huh. No, you boys are very cultured. Except for Mike Hayes. But her first line, one of her very first lines is, I practically just live inside my computer. You know, they do. There's really like, when you go back and watch it, it's like, it's hammered. But I suppose, the first time you watch it, you're just like, it's so. And it goes back to sort of that, the feeling of like the representation of French New Wave, except it works, like they know what they're doing there. But here, because it's so shitty, that the surprise kind of works because why?
Right.
Nice hearing from you. Me, I practically just live inside my computer. You know, perhaps we can chat sometime. Lady Renegade.
I thought it was going to be like one of the first times they meet up, they go to the art museum. And she's looking at this painting of Ada Lovelace, you know, one of the, I guess, people responsible for early computing and whatnot.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, she's going to turn out to be this person, like reincarnated.
Oh.
Because in that theater, they're even dressed similar. Like, she's got a dress that's similar to the how Ada is dressed in the painting. So I'm like, oh, okay, maybe that's it.
And she literally can't shut up about this woman. You would think it's the only thing outside of Java, HTML, XML, and C++ that she knows, you know.
Ada Lovelace. Lady Lovelace. A mathematician from the 19th century. She was the first computer programmer. She wrote the first computer program, and she described the first computer and correctly predicted its applications.
But did everyone in the room, was it clear to you that that was a special effect when she was looking at that painting?
No.
I was doing research, I was watching a video, and they made fun of that frame. And I was like, oh, I didn't pick up
Not
at all. I was like,
I mean, what was the insinuation, that it was like a green screenshot or something?
Yeah, that they weren't standing, they were in whatever, they were in the art place, but they weren't standing in front of the, and they never moved towards the painting, so I can see. Fool me, though. Hey, Nguyen, fool me. The thing about this movie is it is absolutely more competent than the movie he made later in his success, Redemic.
Mm-hmm.
The edits, like, the editing sucks, but, you know, there's, like, two shots and coverage of bland places, but, you know.
Sound is better.
Man, see, once he starts to realize he's an auteur, he just starts to give in to his worst indulgences.
I'm pretty sure I own Birdemic too. I haven't watched. I mean, the fact that I don't know how to find it in my home probably tells you what I feel about it. But so you did a kind of a deep dive on this guy, huh?
You know, I like to know my shit about weirdos. I love weird people like this. They're exciting.
True. I mean, I suppose we could look here. Does he have anything else coming up?
I met him once.
He's trying to, yeah?
Nice enough guy.
Yeah, just, but he seems like a regular dude.
Yeah.
He is a sale. He's like, has the kind of job that he writes about.
Yeah.
His, I don't really want to get into the too deep on B-movie, but like, the dude's sexual politics are a nightmare and could like have their own podcast. So let's just be very clear that if that, like, that's something you care about, I enjoy it because it's fun for me to like try to disassemble and like find my own toxic masculinity in this guy's issues, but it's not good.
Are you referring to Jack now?
I'm referring to James.
Oh, to the director. Okay.
Yes. I mean, Jack is the avatar through which Jack is the guy him. is who he thinks a nice guy is. Is the guy who's not just for sex.
Right. Well, I mean, yeah, Mark sex, Stevens, but... to be clear. I mean, because as Jack points out, he only mostly hangs out with Mark Stevens.
He mentions it. Mostly I hang out with Mark Stevens. I wrote that down.
I did too.
I love that line. What?
Like, oh yes, Mark Stevens, of course.
Mostly I hang out with Mark Stevens. He's a great guy, despite his warped outlook on women and the whole mating ritual. He seems to think that women's whole purpose in life is to shop, and that men's whole purpose is to provide women with money, so the women, in turn, will feel obligated to provide us with sex.
There are some good lines, but this movie is, and I think that's it. This movie's front-loaded, and especially if you're like watching a Riff Track stream, which is where I first saw this, of course, and then you start to lose attention. It doesn't drag, but when you're watching it, are you saying that the second twist was her not being alive?
Is that yes? Yes, because I figured. I mean, obviously, there's something up with her.
It took him a long time to figure. Did it take longer for you to figure it out than it took for him to figure it out?
No, I did figure it out before he did. This is sort of like the formula that I was alluding to. When he decides to track down the reality of what she is, he goes from one clue to the next, getting these little pieces. And so he'll go visit somebody. They'll talk. There will be a flashback involving her. Then he will go to the next clue given by that person. They will talk. There will be a flashback. So it get very formulaic at that point. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's where things really slow down, because ultimately you just know he's going to get there. And a lot of the stories also amount to the same thing, which is she's a computer genius and you're sort of learning the trajectory of her career, where she went through college, then made a company, then sold the company for like $1 billion, which I think, isn't that also in Birdemic? Isn't there some sort of corporate sale?
Yes, all the sales are very important, and making that huge sale is very, very important. In Birdemic, he secures it by giving a 50% discount because he's a very good salesman and he like knows how to close the deal. Mm-hmm. Just give half off. And that's when he can buy the Ferrari. But the Ferrari comes a little later in this movie.
But even like the relationship setup is similar to Birdemic.
No, this movie is the first 15 minutes of Birdemic stretched out into a full movie. And he's way too efficient of a stalker. There's no roadblocks at all.
No,
it's just...
No.
And these characters aren't... The only thing we learn about her is that James Nguyen definitely thinks that women would be happier with families rather than being the most important, powerful, richest human on the planet, as this woman obviously would by creating the ability to live forever inside a computer.
Right. Well, and
literally holds the key to immortality in her hands, and she's like, "Oh, that." It's shitty, but I mean, she's doing it by herself, so you know.
Okay, but here's the other thing. Since we're obviously not going point by point, we're all over the map here. It's a blob on
the map.
The map
is not the territory.
Yeah, it's a blob on a napkin, and we're just going for it. One thing that I thought was gonna happen that didn't happen though this dude, his whole thing, and they establish it ad nauseum, is that he sells computer chips. Special
Millennium Series X.
Yeah, yeah. Millennium X, whatever, computer chip. Okay, and it's
Tony's
a big
not
deal.
Interested, though.
No.
Tony's hard nut to crack.
He gets them. He does get them in the end.
Yeah, once he...
But, so, you've got this girl, and she's designed this sphere that she can live in until the end, when all of a sudden she's like, well, my sphere's dying. It's not perfect, and glad that you want me, and you came to terms with your feelings, and you can accept me for what I am, but I'm going to die now. I was like, okay, for sure. The obvious play here is that these special cool chips are going to be the thing that she needs to fix the sphere, and that they can be together. And that all of that backstory with him is going to be the important thing that will come around in the end and help her to live. And they just didn't do it at all.
Why didn't they do that?
Jay, the tall man needed her.
The tall man?
The tall man needed her ball.
Yeah. I'll accept it.
Another something that doesn't exist.
What?
The tall man?
The tall man? Because he's dead?
Did he die?
Yeah,
he never
Angus,
dies.
Oh,
well, I mean, Angus died.
You're talking about Phantasm. We just reviewed a movie called The Tall Man.
Oh, that's right. I'm sorry, guys. I listened to that episode for sure.
Underrated film.
It is. It's a good movie.
Yeah?
It's an interesting
Better
movie.
Than The Bye-Bye Man?
Didn't see the
But yeah, so you, that's your neat little bow. That was sort of a question that I had was, what could have been added to this story to, like, make it interesting?
Oh, that's a great question.
And I'm definitely making the character, the woman, and, like, casting a actor with charisma in either of those roles, I think would be huge. If the actor that played Julie had some sort of guile, I think that she would really like liven it up. And if you made her motivations darker and more mysterious and then set up mm-hmm. some third act problems.
The only problem is that he's just uncovering her story. And when, by the time he does, you know, she's admitting that she's dying, which why would you let it get to that point? Why would you do any of this? Wouldn't she know that she's dying well in advance of when she is? I guess maybe just an exploration of the actual technology of it or diving into the, you know.
See, that's the representation. If the more you get into the tech, the like, more miserable.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I'm trying to come up with something because right off the top of my head, I don't know what would help this.
I like your idea, Jay, of, I mean, it would only help the ending, really, but your idea for the chip.
Oh, that being the thing that... It's tough because that could do the trick, but it would ultimately, I feel like, on this guy's budget level, just be an act... accomplished through dialogue, you know, like, I don't know that. So yeah, I mean, I think it would make a better, tighter ending, but on screen, I don't know how you would interestingly portray it.
Yeah. He's going for he wants the drama. He wants the drama of the, he wants sad.
Mm-hmm. Clearly.
Remember me this way. Okay. The way I was when we were together. But not as a dream, as reality.
You are my reality.
Forever.
Forever.
He wants pathos. And he's getting a bit of pathos.
He got it. Boy, did he get it.
Boy, golly. Hey, I want to try a line reading before we go. I'm going to do this and I'm going to play Jack and you're going to be Julie, but you'll have to figure out what your line is, okay?
Let's okay.
Ready?
I like this.
Does that mean you're ready to tell me about yourself?
Not right now.
Oh, no, that's close.
I mean,
there was more of a setup. You can cut this part out. That didn't work very well.
Would you want to give him the line?
What was I supposed to do?
Okay, I'll give you your first line, but I can't give you your last line. You're supposed to say, thanks, Jack. I've always needed someone like you.
Okay. You now?
Yes.
Paul, leave this in.
Leave it all in, Paul.
You don't gotta tell me.
Thanks, Jack. I've always needed someone like you.
Does that mean that you're ready to tell me about yourself?
I went to Not... Grant.
What?
The funniest. She just says no. Oh. And it fades to black.
Oh, yes. Okay.
I'll put the clip in.
I've always needed someone like you.
Does that mean you're ready to tell me about yourself?
Oh, yes, I do remember that. It fades. She says no, and it fades to black.
I gotta give this movie another shot.
It's there are good bits. I think some tighter. I think if you edit this down maybe into 70 minutes, you might have a more watchable bad movie.
See, that's the thing. And
for sure.
I went into this thinking, oh, this is pre-Birdemic, which means it's going to be worse than Birdemic. But it's kind of not in a way.
But what is that saying?
It's not as fun. It's not as interesting.
Yep.
And it's more confident, which is a weird mix. So, I don't know. I struggled mightily.
I mean, by Birdemic, when the dude was selling Birdemic, he was like driving around a famous movie festival.
Con.
No, not Con. That would be awesome.
Sundance?
No, the Redford, huh? Yeah, Sundance. Like, he was driving around. He was trying to sell it. He was driving around with like Birdemic in a Birdemic truck, like with speakers. So I think there's something to be said for the fact that he knew a little more. There's a really great How Did This Get Made episode with the actor from Birdemic, and she
Whitney Moore.
Is that her? Mm-hmm. Have you met her?
I've not.
Oh, okay. Met Whitney. I thought
we know someone who worked with Whitney.
She seems mm-hmm. really charming, and like she seems really charming, and yeah, but seems like he sort of gets it, and sort of he's a salesman.
You know, I always with guys like this that have this vibe, you know, it's like your Stephen Grews, your Neil Breen's. I look at what this guy does and I wonder how he fits into that, you know, like that sort of, God, I don't want to say Mount Rushmore of like no budget, somehow popular movies. I don't know if he fits in there, but that he's definitely yeah. in that of that ilk. And I just wonder as a filmmaker, because there's a lot of stories, especially about Gru, of him mistreating people, you know, yeah. and thinking of himself as an auteur and making sure everybody knows that, you know, mm-hmm. and I wonder where James fits into that. Hopefully on the very polite and earnest and...
No.
You no? don't think so?
Whitney will not work with him again.
No, so. No. Oh, really?
No.
Yeah, I think she got a bit creeped out by him.
Yeah. I mean, have you watched his movies?
Yeah. Well. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's a... Yeah. Yeah. I mean, all these guys are...
It's sort of lightning in a bottle.
Yeah, absolutely. We've never seen this without Birdemic, and people will be watching Birdemic long after all of us are living immortally.
That's a sad thought.
In the computer.
In a metal sphere.
In a little ball. Going down that mortuary, hunting people with a knife coming out of us.
Good night, everybody.
Rating time!
John, do you have a scale?
I'm pretentious. I like to not rate things.
Well, then you should rate something or like make it really pretentious.
Rated or like a review's either starred or not starred.
Starred or not starred?
Yeah. And a not starred review can be good.
We had Ashley Barlow. Normally we have a 100-point rating.
Is that the daughter from The West Wing?
No.
Yes.
Ashley Barlow was on our guest on The Tall Man, which you didn't listen to. Thanks for that. But she rated it. She rated The Tall Man Fear. That was her rating.
Fear.
So you can rate it whatever you can rate this thing whatever you want.
And just give me a framework from which to rate with.
I'm just going to just going to go with loathing.
Loathing? Is there a number or an option?
Yeah, out of 100.
Okay, okay. So loathing, if it's 1 to 100 loathing, you, normally the lower the score, the worse. But in this case, since we're loathing, does the high number mean we really hate it? Or, like, are we reversing it and higher number is bad?
Yeah, man. It's just one of those questions of the cosmos.
Okay. All right. Would you like to go first or you want me to go first?
Me?
Yeah.
You're the guest. Oh,
I thought I already went. My rating is literally loathing. Loathing.
Oh, it's just loathing. Okay.
He's not quite getting it.
Oh, okay.
It's kind of a bit on fear loathing, but it works, I think.
But Jay, you should rate it 1 out of 100 loathing.
Yeah, well, you could do whatever you want, buddy.
All right,
I'll
do that.
That's what I'm saying.
Paul, what do you want to give it?
Oh, God. 15 loathing.
15 loathing. Okay, so Paul's keeping with the more traditional scale of rating.
If I go 85 loathing, people are going to call me nuts.
Right. Well, right. Okay, so yeah. All right, Paul, I'm with you. I'm going to do the same thing. And okay. John, I don't know how long you've been listening to our show. I don't know how many episodes that you've listened to.
Boy, for a while.
For a while? Okay. Are you familiar with the Josh Kirby scale?
I am. I've heard of it, but I am not familiar enough to like rattle it off.
Josh Kirby from season one really became a benchmark for how we judge movies. When a movie comes along like this, you go, well, would I rather watch Josh Kirby again, or would I rather watch this again? And if the answer is you'd rather watch Josh Kirby, you must rate it beneath what you gave Josh Kirby. I gave Josh Kirby an 11.
Mm-hmm.
I would rather watch Josh Kirby than this movie again.
Right.
I can't imagine a scenario other than what we're doing right now that would be appropriate for this movie. If you're watching movies with friends, like we always talk about, there's better movies to watch with friends than this one. They're going to get mad at you. You would never want to watch this by yourself just to do it. So,
yeah, you certainly would not want to do that 4 times in 2 days.
No, you would not.
Because you feel bad that you made other people watch it. You're like, oh fuck, I better know what I'm talking about. I gotta do this more than just a bit.
I'm going to give this 6 loathings.
Wow.
Just 6.
How, Santa's Summer House is your lowest.
This is higher than Santa's Summer House. I would rather watch this again. Oh yeah, I'd rather watch this again than Santa's Summer House.
Wow. Wow.
I mean,
Paul, how does that make you feel?
It's shitty.
Oh, I can't make him feel too bad. Everybody else was the same way.
So much more going on in that movie than this piece of shit.
Should we get into Bad Chicken now? Should we bring up Bad Chicken? All right, guys. I've been listening long enough to know what buttons to push. That's for goddamn sure. And Chris Hudson, I'm coming for you.
Uh-oh.
Oh.
Crazy Chris Hudson.
Yeah, we want to do another one of these.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We want to do Replica.
We got to do Replica, which means I'm going to have to shell out the money. That's bullshit. But
we'll find it. I mean, we found this on YouTube.
Yeah.
So this might be on YouTube.
Thanks for joining us, John.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me, guys. It was a really fun time, and I'd love to join you again for another mini someday.
For sure.
And we'll check out another movie by the great, someday late, James Nguyen. Not if we're on the computer, not if we're in the ball.
I do not have a better closing line than that, so let's just use that.